see you coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis...
What's the story? Welcome to the three-man weave, the Boz.EGA podcast. A very exciting week here in Boz HQ. We've been YouTube mania, Mick. It's been nothing but debates and division in this office for the last week.
Non-stop. And just to bring it to the... We're almost down to the semi-final stage now. I think by the time this is out, the results will be revealed. We've got semi-finals of Castletown Donkey Derby 1994 versus Eamon Dunphy's Rod Little rant. An amazing semi-final there. And then on the other side, we've got the famous What's Knots versus I'll Have Sex Tonight and Everything. Now, that's a legendary and late horse trainer, Peter Casey, on his reaction to winning the race in an interview with Tracy Pigott, in case anyone's watched it. Everybody's getting into it. It's been really, really, really good crack. And we've lots more to come with the semi-finals and finals. So I hope everybody is enjoying it. But I just wanted to bring a specific point about it, this being a GEA show. None of the four were GEA. The furthest I think that anything got was F and Eddie. He went out to I can't remember who he went out to, but well beaten anyway in the round of 16. That's the furthest the GEA video got. However, I would say that all four elements, actually no, possibly not Dunphy, but the other three have huge kind of GEA, they're GEA adjacent, obviously. Yeah. So Castletown Donkey Derby, that's like everybody on in that field that day is definitely into hurling, I would say. You know, and then you have Peter Casey is like, that's a classic hurl. That's a classic like GEA reaction. It reminds you a little bit of Jonathan Glynn. Like it's like a funnier Jonathan Glynn response to a question in a post-match interview. And then, of course, you have, you know, well, I don't know if the Den quite gets the GEA
community doesn't row in behind it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would imagine though they were like, you know, it was Amy from Cavan and Kevin from Galway, two GEA strongholds. So I don't know. I'm thinking the GEA crowd for me is going to go for the Castletown Donkey Derby.
Yeah, I agree. Or the hurling crowd anyway.
Yeah. I don't know. I think in general the rural GEA crowd will think that the Castletown Donkey Derby is their video for the semi-finals.
Get up on Boz.ie. You can vote there for... We're looking for Ireland's greatest YouTube video. That's what we're talking to here, in case you haven't been following that. My name is Morris Brosnan. I probably should have said that at the start. That's Mick McCarthy. And we're joined by Gary Connington. Is this a debut for you, Gary?
This is my debut. I'm a bit nervous.
That's
here.
Massive.
But, I know. I have big shoes to fill with no Mark Farley today. So.
Coming in for the Super 8s. That's a bold call.
Bit of a ringer.
As the third man in the three-man weave for the first time, I actually forgot that you hadn't been introduced there, and I was kind of nodding at you to come in and talk about the Donkey Derby there for a second. So apologies for that, Gary.
Right, we're going to preview all of this weekend's games. This is our guest, the Handicap Show. I'm back in the hot seat today, so I'm taking on Gary.
So this is an interesting one, because I'm going to do the questions, having been beaten last week, but I was defeated by Mark. So this is going to be, for the first time in Guest the Handicap's history, we're going to have an interim champion. And Mark will be back next week to defend his title against whoever wins. So there's a lot at stake here. There's basically a place on next week's podcast at stake here for this one. But we've lots to talk about the different games and stuff like that, because this is a big weekend. Like.
Massive, yeah. We'll start with the hurling, will we?
Yeah, I think we'll start with the hurling. So, Croke Park, 2 o'clock, RT2. This on the same time, of course, as Meath and Donegal, Cork and Kilkenny. Before we get to the spreads, Morris, have you planned out your... I know you're going to Kerry and Donegal, so I'm just wondering, or Kerry and Mayo, how are you going to manage to watch all four games that are happening between 2 and 6 o'clock, if you're actually at one of them?
Well, Saturday night is fine. I'd be grand on Saturday evening. It's Sunday that's the problem. So I think and this is the brilliant thing about hindsight, that once I've seen the Kerry game, I then know what I need to watch back, and also what I don't need to watch back, because I've the means to watch them all. And I know what to overlook. So once I've seen that and the Sunday game, I think I'll designate time Sunday evening and Monday morning to get in the other two that I'll miss out on. And it'll set me up finally for a podcast that I hope I'm involved in on Monday.
There's nobody like you for that kind of thing. I don't know, Gary, you're going to be in here, so you'll have the two screens going on either side of you.
Yeah, I'm going to be here in Balls HQ, so we're well kitted out for...
Well equipped.
I shouldn't miss a second of it anyway, so I'm looking forward to it.
And I've decided that the only way for me to do it is just the two-screen experience. I'm going to give the main TV to Cork and Kilkenny, and then I'm going to give the main TV to Kerry and Mayo, and I'm going to go with Sky Player for Donegal Meath on the laptop probably, and then I might even transfer to the iPad for the RT player for Tip and Leash. But I'm gonna
have two
screens going between 1:30 and about 6 o'clock on Sunday evening. My wife's out with the girls. I'm locking in. I'm gonna get a big bag of Doritos or something, and I'm gonna lock myself in the room for the day. And we're gonna watch a shitload of GA. I wish it wasn't on the same time. I think it's a disgrace, a disaster. I talked about it in my 30-second whinge on Monday. But if we're gonna have it, I'm gonna make the bloody best of it.
Speaking of disgrace and disasters, before we talk about this game, can we talk about the fact that Cork fans are being snookered by the fact they have a game on Saturday evening and then a game on Sunday? So there's a load of There's a lot of different elements to this that I find interesting, right? And I can kind of appreciate from the GA's perspective, like, they didn't, it's a really hard thing to foresee, and there's other costs involved or whatever. Like, it's a difficult thing to avoid. But so that's one thing. And I think from a Cork perspective, it is like, it would be very disappointing. But the reasoning that they were given by John Horan is incredible. It's literally incredible that this is, so for those who don't know, John Horan was asked, he did an interview in the Irish Standard during the week, and he was asked about a whole host of things, about six teams being in Leinster for the Hurling Championship and all this kind of thing. But he was asked about...
Or even eight teams, as he said.
A possibility. So he was asked about the scheduling conflict here and whether or not that was fair on Cork fans. And here is how he responded. So his quote is, "When you talk about Cork supporter, and I think we all know the Cork football supporter will be a different cohort to the Cork hurling supporter, for the guy that bridges both these gaps, that's just unfortunate." There's so many different conversations that you can have about that, but to pretend that a county like Cork doesn't have such a proud dual history and an overlap of fans is incredible. It's
like, actually, you're saying pretend. I hope that's what he's doing. I hope he's lying and doesn't think that, because how out of touch could the GAA president be to think that
that's Cork, the reality? Yeah,
exactly. So that would be even worse to me. So I don't know what is going on. Like, that is... Like, I've actually even said to you that there is a defence to be made for not changing the games around, that one of them being, I would say, a very genuine... I have absolutely no idea how much a live broadcast OTB crew costs, but I'm imagining it's closer to 20,000 than 10,000, all right? I think it is definitely over 10 anyway. And for that to be just thrown into RT's budget, if they've been told all along that they had a doubleheader in Croke Park, or anywhere, a doubleheader somewhere for the hurling quarterfinals, and that they were going to cover them, for that to suddenly change and for them to have to cover Killarney, maybe say
Tullamore
for Tipperary and then the Dublin match as well, you know, they would still do two games in Croke Park, and then maybe they'd have to broadcast four games on the Sunday rather than the three that they're doing and one on Saturday night at the moment. So there is a lot of logistical issues. That's just like the draw happened to happen this way. Dublin are, you know, it comes down to the original sin of Dublin having the game in Croke Park as well, you know, but it would still be up here anyway, so the fans would still have to travel. But, you know, I think it's more unfortunate than anything else for Cork, but I wish they would just say, look, this can't happen. It's a logistical nightmare. It's a pity that this is the case, instead of trying to wash it away as a non-issue.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people ever punish honesty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If it's just like, we can't do it, I'm sorry, this is a terrible situation, we wish it was better for you, but you're probably either going to have to stay up or you're going to have to choose between them this week.
What really irks me, right, is that I think there's a perception, rightly or wrongly, there's a perception that the GAA prioritise some quarters above others. So whether that be fans or teams, and I think we've seen a lot of current players, and we're going to hear from Cathair Healy, the Leash hurler, later, who gave an incredible interview during the week. The whole thing will be available to read on site, but we're going to play a snippet of that later. But for John Horan, when he was Leinster Council President, right, when he was Leinster Council Chairman, was so adamant that he wouldn't force Leinster fans to have to travel across to West Galway, that he wasn't going to inconvenience fans that much, so Galway couldn't ever get a home game. So he asked repeatedly whether or not Galway could finally play a home game if they compete in this competition, said no. Also, it was the same man who said no to their minors under 21s being allowed to compete in it. So he obviously had a huge amount of regard for Dublin or Leinster fans. We'll say Leinster fans are given the benefit of the doubt in terms of travelling there. But to not apply the same regard to Cork fans is incredible. You're kind of letting it down there. I can't understand how you can't appreciate it from these different perspectives. And even if you do, to present it the way he has, I think is shows an incredible lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, like, at a time when we're supposed to be promoting boat codes in all counties, and especially in counties where like maybe hurling isn't as strong, they're trying to promote that with the various competitions and stuff, to kind of disregard Cork, which would be the county which it's, maybe is more synonymous
example, yeah. Yeah,
as being a dual code county, to just disregard people, obviously people don't watch boat there, like it's a completely ridiculous statement I think to make.
Yeah, it's you're 100% right in terms of the, like, I mean, should we not be holding Cork up as an example to everybody else, you know? And we really should, because it's even, it is less divided even than Galway. You know, actually, Dublin probably has the smallest divide within clubs in the country.
Yeah,
Cork is next, I would say, you know. And, you know, like, it's funny, they're saying, like, there are, okay, there's football clubs like Nemo, and there is kind of hurling-only clubs like, you know, the Pearshig or someone like that. And especially in the city, there's a little bit of a divide there. But generally, they play a bit of everything there. And there's, like, you know, they're GEA people, and that's what, like, you know, I've sat and watched the Munster football final with Shawnee McGrath before, and he knew all of the players. They're very close teams as well, you know, like, so it's just an absolute ludicrous comment, you know, and one of that just really, really annoyed me. But that doesn't tell us any more about who's going to win between Cork and Kilkenny, the old former Clash of the Titans. It seems like when they meet now, it's always in an All-Ireland quarterfinal. Ever since they had their run of All-Ireland finals in the mid-2000s, they played in, I know they played in the 2013 quarter-final, and they played, I think, like towards the end of, I think maybe like the time Donal O got sent off. Do you remember it was kind of the last hurrah of the post-strike team?
Yeah.
You know, when the old lads came back for one more thing. I think that was a quarter-final as well. They haven't, they've met a few times now at this level.
Yeah, it's a totally different rivalry as well, looking ahead to this weekend. I think the only like carryover, there's probably, it's Cadigan might have been playing in 2013 anyway. But in terms of the Cody effect, I think is the major one.
Own Cadigan, Lahan, Horgan. There's a few that would have been there, and a few.
I'd say Hogan as well. Richie Hogan was probably playing.
Richie
that
Hogan,
yeah.
TJ.
Yeah,
like there is a few knocking around, but it's completely different teams.
But
like at different levels and stages.
I think the main reason that Kilkenny, I don't know what the spread is in here. I think it's tight, and I don't think it should be. And I think a lot of weight is being placed.
Well, you're after giving Gary a clue because he's going first. But go on.
I think a lot of weight is being placed in the Cody effect, because even if you look in terms of straight matchups, like. We're talking off air, Mick, about the six Cork forwards who will start, and people are losing their minds after, you know, Fitzgibbon was playing half forward against Westmeath. Like, regular listeners to this podcast shouldn't be surprised at all, because Derek McGrath told us about that 3 months ago, that was going to come down the line. McGrath also predicted this thing about what they're going to do at centre back, that they're going to have to make a change there, and sure enough, Mark Ennis says, but that's a self plug there. But as a whole, like, I think that those out six will totally outgun Kilkenny. I think they've got probably a better stronghold in the middle of the park, and the way Nash is playing right now, I think that's better as well. The only question mark over Cork is what they're going to do with their full back line and how that goes. But in terms of straight matchups, that's what I'm talking about, straight matchups, I think Cork have a massive edge, and that there's still some weight being, like, Kilkenny under Cody will never back down, will stand toe-to-toe, but I don't know how much weight you can put in that now.
I agree with you completely. Having watched them twice against Wexford and in the Galway game in full this year, and I was away for the Dublin match, and obviously Carlo wasn't on TV, but like, having watched them in 3 70-minute matches, my take in Kilkenny is that they've still got all the fighting elements of a Brian Cody team. They've still got the TJ Reid bit of magic and everything that goes with the 4 or 5 really, really top players that they have, but they don't have the hurlers. The periphery players aren't good enough, and it's a remarkable thing to say about Kilkenny, and I don't think any of us are used to it, and I don't think it's dawned on people yet. And I think it's a credit to them that they've stayed, got the draw against Wexford, they could have won, that they stayed with them in the Leinster final, and that they stayed with Galway till the very end in a game that Galway should have won by 10 points, you know. I think it's a credit to them. But I don't think they're good enough.
Yeah.
And I think Cork are. I think Cork are in a very clear top three at the moment. So anyway, that's what I think of it. But Gary, it's more important to know what you think of it, because you're going first on Guess the Handicaps this week.
Yeah.
Pro Park, 2 o'clock Sunday.
Like you said, Kilkenny are kind of hanging in there, but they're just, Cork do seem to have the quality over them. But then again, like Mara said, there's been a lot of faith placed in Brian Cody to just kind of keep Kilkenny hanging on. So for that reason, I think it's going to be it's going to be tight, so I'm going to say Cork -2.
I'd say it's probably wider than that. I would have thought, geez, I don't know now.
Just the
thought.
Way he looks at you sometimes is like he's looking for the bit of a nod or something like that. I won't be giving anything away. I'm all right at poker.
Cork would beat -2 if depending on what they do with TJ. And I think that's the most interesting matchup looking ahead. They have to do what works with it and have somebody like O'Hanlon hopping off him all day. Like, they can't, Galway put Mannion on him and try to out-hurl him. That's just not going to work. Like, he'll work himself into games. So I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody deputised. Like, I don't know if Ennis is that man to follow him everywhere and go blow for over him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody do that. Maybe even bringing out somebody from the full back line and tasking him with doing that.
That's what I was thinking, actually. Yeah, I could see. I wonder, like, maybe 10 years ago, I would have said O'Callaghan was the man.
I would have said O'Callaghan too, yeah.
I don't know if he still has the legs for it at this stage, but.
I'll say -3.
Right. It's Cork -2.
Is it? Okay.
Great start from Gary. Yeah. Ooh. So 2-0 to Gary. His first go at Guess the Handicaps is he gets it 100% right and goes into an early lead. There is only 6 games this week.
This is easy.
So that's a good lead to start with. I will say, though, I think you're right that it should be wider. I think Kilkenny probably should be bigger favourites, or Cork should be bigger favourites. But I think what we're talking about, Kilkenny, in terms of the Leinster final, in terms of the Wexford, other Wexford match, in terms of the Galway game, is that they have an ability to just stick with teams.
Yeah.
And I know Cork could just, firepower could just put them away, but I think Kilkenny's, their biggest quality this year. Tip versus Laois, then. This is not the game we expected to be talking about.
No.
You were talking to Cara Healy.
I was, yeah. So, as I said already, there's a lot of this interview. I'd really, really encourage people to go and read this interview. When you're writing up these interviews and making Gary know this well, you transcribe the whole thing. And as I was writing it up to do the interview for Saturday, I cut very little of it because so much of what he said was relevant and incredibly powerful. And we're going to talk about tactical stuff and matchups and all that today, but there's a way bigger conversation about the direction the association is going in and recent messaging from the GPA and even the treatment of certain lower team counties that I think Cahir, as a player, is incredibly self-aware and really reflective and insightful on all this kind of stuff. Because of the nature of our conversation, I can't really play all of that, but here is when we talked about towards the end of our conversation about the current structures about hurling and what last Sunday's result means for Laois, but what has to happen next. And you see him, I asked him, put to him what Paul Cody, the Carlo hurler, who we've had on this podcast twice now, said recently, and this is his thoughts on all of that.
The thing is, yesterday is a brilliant emotional boost for the county. Like, everyone's on a high. It's a wonderful occasion, like I said, for people like Pat Delaney, who have just been involved in hurling in Laois for years, Cheddar, Pat Critchley, a lovely boost for like Brian Campion, Tommy Fitz, James Young, Niall Rigney, lads who hurled with Laois and were brilliant players for Laois and never experienced a day like that. It's a lovely boost. It's brilliant for the kids in the county. But that's not going to sustain them and keep Laois at that level or push them on to a higher level. It'll only give the kids in Laois a selling point to say, hey kids, look what can happen if you keep hurling. But the correct structures have to be there. The amount of games they get have to be there. It has to be there in the schools for them. It has to be there in the clubs for them. Are they getting good enough coaching? Are they getting a good enough program of games all the time to improve and to build on what happened yesterday? It's no good. Like, one victory, success doesn't breed success. I think that's a misnomer. Because if that was the case, Clare would have won a rake of all Irelands after 97. They didn't.
Yeah.
Or if that was the case, Laois got to a Leinster final in 85. If that was the case, well, we would have got to another one. Or we would have got to one in the 90s because the kids saw it in the 80s. We didn't. Because maybe we didn't have the structures and the culture and everything going to push it in that direction while the iron was hot. We didn't strike there. You know, we just have a selling point now. Yesterday is a selling point, but it won't be any good unless we back it up with real effort and commitment to back it up.
The final point is, as you mentioned earlier, that in itself needs to come from the top down. And in a lot of ways, that's a question of priorities. Like, ultimately, you've got to decide, and I think this is particularly true for hurling, actually, whether your focus is on that genuine growth of the game or if it's elsewhere, which is what Paul insinuated as well. It's like, if there was any real ambition to ever grow the game over the last 100 years, that would have happened. But because there hasn't been, this is where we're at.
Yeah. It's like is the focus the top 9 counties and making a brilliant championship around them and selling that and having it on TV and the huge crowds with them repeatedly playing each other? Or is the goal to get a 10th team that could compete with those? Like, Dublin weren't in that bracket 15 years ago. Now they are. That's brilliant. Like, that's amazing. Like, I love the fact Dublin have come up. When I started my debut, I bet Dublin. My championship debut in 05, we beat Dublin by 4 votes. That wasn't a shock. That would have been Laois and Dublin are on a par of a level, and now Laois just won that day. Yeah. 15 years later, Laois beat them, and the whole country is talking about it. It's on RTE News. Like, that's brilliant in the sense of Dublin have risen up so high that Laois beating them is now a major shock. But where are we going now to get the next county up to that level? And the next county after that? Like, it seems to me the focus is we're nearly turning it into a spectator sport that let's just package up the nine best teams, get them to play together against each other loads of times, and the public will have a lovely viewing time on TV and they can go out to the games and have a nice time. But where are we? But is that the focus? The focus should be, let's get the 10 team to that level now. And then if you get a 10 team, where's the next project we can go to, like the Carlow or like the Westmead or like a Laois, and really embed a hurling culture within those places or expand the hurling culture within those places?
That's Carter Healy there, the long time stalwart of Laois hurling, like one of the names that people would have known around the country when Laois were kind of like almost at that breakthrough level against under Cheddar Plunkett. He hasn't been on the team this year, unfortunately, due to a cruciate ligament injury. What a time to start missing out on. Hopefully we'll see him again. Really, really interesting stuff, Morris. There's a longer interview to come out that people can read on Balls.ie on Saturday morning. He says so many interesting things there, so many things that we want to get our teeth into that we don't have time for. In an ideal world, what needs to happen next to satisfy, you know, Carter on the things he was talking
about?
Those
concerns.
There?
Yeah, that's, I mean, two things on that. I think just on Carter himself, I mean, I think there's something kind of sad about a guy who has given so much to Laois in boat codes, actually, and he's in a gym in London, you know, 700 kilometres away, listening to a game on his headphones while he's trying to rehab a dual cruciate injury that he got when he came, his first challenge game this year. Paul Gainey fell on his knee. He went back in with the Laois hurlers in January. And he listened to this game and hers. And he said, as people will see now if they go and read the interview, like he had hammerings and hardship when he was a Laois hurler and not much else. And openly admitted that he was jealous, really jealous to miss out on it. And we talked about, you know, the focus on old servants and managers like Brendan Fitzgerald, but sometimes I think about those players as well, like the absolute soldiers. The example for me is always Tony O'Regan. Like Tony Oak, when the thing that Galway were lacking probably was a bit of that backbone, he was the soldier, like that Galway warrior who carried fight for so many years and never got an All-Ireland medal, obviously. And Cahir missed out on a day like this today, so that's one thing. But because he's in London, he's in an ideal scenario to look back and kind of from the outside of the bubble in and look at the direction that GA is taking. So he sees like the increasing costs for county boards. He's looking at the way games have been developed, who's been prioritised, and the recent messages that he referenced, a survey by the GPA talking about a lot of players being in favour of semi-professionalism. And he feels like more and more it's becoming about like the few, not the many. And it's so I think to answer your question, what Cahir wants to see next is like urgent action from the GAA hierarchy to roll that back, to wrestle control back to clubs and not to counties, to draw budgets back into some sort of control so that we're not building a bubble that may ultimately burst. And I think they're way more important conversations. And I do think it's because I think people will say, oh, these conversations have gone on for years. I really do feel we're heading for a breaking point. I think more and more players are, particularly players from the so-called weaker counties who we have such a strong relationship with on this podcast, they're really airing their concerns, their massive concerns about the direction that the association is going in right now. And I feel like, I really hope, and I don't feel like they feel like they are, but I really hope they're listened to, like they're given a platform and are being heard by, not just by us, but by people who matter, like the people who understand precisely why somebody like Cahir Healy, like, and who said openly, we are the watchmen on the Titanic. Like, we are going to watch the association destroy itself and unless there's something to change. And I feel like, hopefully, as this goes on, people will start to listen to these players because that will reach a breaking point. It'll only go on for so long.
Yeah. It's like when, you know, the world is melting and we'll be like, you know, the people who told us that this was going to happen and be like, lads, you know, it's not as, oh, I only found out about this now. It's like we've been saying it. We've been in plain sight the whole time. Gary, you're from Westmead, from a football tradition, right? Mm-hmm. And very, very similar kind of like level to Laois, and obviously could be in this position, you know, but for, you know, luck and a few different other things, right? Now, on a more positive note, what I'm seeing this week is people, you know, people I follow on Twitter organizing, like, you know, bandwagon buses, as they call themselves. There's nothing wrong with a bandwagon in this case, from like deep in football country, to get up to, you know, to go to Croke Park and support the county. Which, and I've seen so many football people just getting behind it because it's their county, and it doesn't matter if they know anything about hurling or not. But that should inspire a next generation, and so on and so forth. Like, have you noticed any, like, Westmead have been on that edge for about coming up on 10 years now. Like, have you noticed that kind of drifting into any kind of, like, of the less traditional hurling pockets, that there would be that kind of sense of, we should go to the John McDonagh Cup final to support our county?
I think there is, like, I'm from the south of Westmead, which has very little hurling. There's only two or three clubs there, really, and the, like, vast, vast majority is up in the north half. But I think there has been a kind of, not so much even in playing terms, but even in just support in terms of people, like you said, going up to the Joe McDonagh Cup final there a couple of weeks ago to support Westmead. But yeah, I don't know, like, the whole, the structure, again, like, this thing, not about structures every week in this, with the Leinster Hurling Championship and how many teams should be in it. And I know there was talk of, oh, maybe we'll extend that now. And, like, that's the effect that Laois's win over Dublin had. But I suppose there was kind of the sense that that fifth team in Leinster was always going to be a yo-yo team, that you had your four teams in Leinster. And like it was said there, like, you know, we need to be doing more to try and help the likes of Laois, Westmead, Carlow to bridge that gap and actually to be able to consistently compete with the four bigger so-called counties in Leinster. How we do that, I don't know. If it means adding more teams to the Leinster Championship, it's like, again, there's no easy answer to it. But
yeah, like, we me and Morris have talked about this before, that we would love a six team in the Leinster Championship, and there's various different reasons. Then you make the Joe McDonagh Cup a bigger competition, and so on and so forth, right? And probably lose one of the other three. But I don't want that done if it's done because they're afraid of Dublin getting relegated. That they were happy with five when they assumed that it'd be Laois, Carlow, Offaly,
it's a question
all
of priorities,
them up and down. And now it's like, oh, hold on, well, Dublin could easily get caught. That gap is closing. You know, Wexford, whoever. Like, I don't mean to be just dismissing Dublin either, who I think in general had a good year. But it's like, that's not why you make changes. And that was the fear. That was the feeling I had from those John Horan comments that we just glossed over a little bit earlier about the bigger, maybe possibly even two groups of four in an eight-team competition.
Yeah, Jim Bulger said that.
Sorry, it was Jim Bulger. And that's just protecting the big teams, which is what Munster have already done and what Leinster thought they didn't need to do.
Yeah.
But now probably are looking at it differently. And that's not for the benefit of Westmeath or Laois or Carlow or Offaly or anyone. It's for the benefit of Dublin and Wexford.
Yeah, and I always go back to this quote, but I think it's one of the best ones we ever heard. Paul Rouse, in his book, The Hurlers, he spoke to this openly. He's like, you look at the original teams who competed in the Hurling Championship, and since then there's been two new teams who've come and gone, Waterford and Galway. But other than that, it's the exact same teams who have consisted of that. Offaly had a brief flirtation as well. The lack of growth in any sort of form is incredible. It's probably one of the association's greatest failures. Yeah. And I don't see enough pressing concerns to fix that. We should do Laois the due credit of talking about this game as well, because there's so many, like, how Ryan Mullaney will go on Bubbles, I think it'd be an absolute all-time classic. Like, that's a rock meeting a hard place right there. The thing about Tip, though, that Dublin don't have, and Mick, you referenced this on Monday's podcast, the spread of scores that Dublin have.
Yeah.
Tip could beat you in 5 minutes. Like, Tip could score 3-2 in 5 minutes and the game's over. Like, imagine ball going to McGrath or Callanan and that's it, you're gone. So that would suggest to me that Laois would have to withdraw further if they want to stay competitive.
I have a serious worry about this game for Laois, because, and it's not anything negative on them, it's realising that Dublin are a very peculiar hurling team at the moment, and have been for a number of years, in that they've enough good players and are well organised enough and their level is high enough that they can compete with anyone. But they're not of that sort of lights out quality where they would have seven or eight, like, especially forwards of the best players on the pitch, where they can beat the likes of Laois or Carlow like that, like, in a really, really handily, you know. There was always a danger that Laois were going to give them a good game today. However, and I don't mean this disparaging towards Laois, I don't, but I think if the draw had been different and Cork had played them, and obviously we saw what they did to Westmead, I don't think Cork would have lost that match in 100 years.
Yeah.
Or 100 goals. I really don't. I think it would have been closer than what the Westmead game was, and I think Laois could have played their very, very best and even run them close. But I can't see, Cork would have beaten them by minimum 3 points every time. And I think that has to be acknowledged. And I hope I'm making myself clear as to what the describing the way the, what that is. Unfortunately, I see Tip in that bracket.
Yeah.
And I can't... I think it's what you're saying there. I think you might have Milani on bubbles. And that might, in theory, be a good matchup. But it's only a good matchup if everybody around them is also a good matchup.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't mean that John McGrath has the space at Croke Park to play in. Because even Bubbles could kill Milani then, because he's going to have to go. And you don't mark a man in isolation. Yeah. He plays the game that's in front of him. And Tip, I just think, could end up having just way too much space in this game.
Yeah.
And I think they'll kill them with space.
And,
and that's why I just worry that it could get out of hand a little bit.
And just the final word on that before we move on. But I think what you're getting at, just to, for people who are listening as well, like if Leash are playing Wexford, I think Leash would, like, styles make fights. Like, this is more so than about, like, Wexford are a better team than Kilkenny, but I think Leash would match up better with Wexford than they would against Kilkenny. And I think it's the team that they will not match up well against is somebody like Tipperary, who can run right, and this mad rotating thing that we talked about a lot this year and how difficult it is to suffocate that. And I suppose Limerick probably showed them a way, but it's how, like, if Leash go down that road, you're nearly robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that you're going to pull Chad Dwyer further out the field, probably one of, or even both of the Dunphys further out the field. Does Ross King come out from inside in the corner? Where does Paddy Purcell play then? That is... And I'm sure Eddie Brennan has developed
a better plan than we do, exactly. I'm sure. Yeah. And, like, nobody knows, like, you know, how to play under Liam Sheedy better than Eddie Brennan anyway. Like, so, you know, I think they'll have a plan. I think they'll get things right. I just think it's beyond his control, ultimately, you know. Yeah.
They're running on empty at this stage as well. Like, this is the third weekend.
Good point.
Very good
but
point.
Physically and emotionally too, because they put in so much into that game against Dublin, and when nobody expected them to win, I know there is a lot to be said for, oh, they have the momentum coming into the game, but, like, they have to be drained after the last 2 weeks. Mm. Like, beating, like,
to get that high, yeah, twice.
Like, that was their goal for the year, was to beat Westmeath and win the Joe McDonagh. And then to manage to lift themselves and beat Dublin the following week was amazing. And then to have to try and do that a third week against a team who are a level above Dublin is just so hard to do.
Yeah.
Is this me?
It's you first, yeah.
I'm going to say, I'll say minus 12.
Gary.
Yeah, I was going to go for around that. I'm going to say minus 10.
Oh, you should have went the other way. It's minus 15.
Okay, yeah.
Which so is, 2-1. You know, again, it's kind of like, you could look at that as disrespectful to Leash, absolutely. But the other way of looking at it is just like, you know, what we've talked about, I think, is probably the fear of a lot of people watching it. I think the biggest thing here is that it's a doubleheader, Cork and Kilkenny, you would hope. I think there'll probably be a bit of a clear out from both counties, just the way they are. You know, I remember going up to the Galway Clare game. I was, you know, shamefully not at the first match myself, so I can't really give out about them. But as I walked up to the Galway Clare game in 2013, I could not cross the bridge in Turles with the amount of Cork and Kilkenny people that were coming the other way. It was actually insane. It was like I couldn't get through the gap to get up to the match. So I'd imagine a lot of them will leave, but I expect a big Leash crowd there. I hope they get on the hill. I hope, you know, and I just see that there's a really good atmosphere, and they will say to the end, whatever about anybody else, like when they're hammered. So I'd love to see it. Busloads from deep in football country, etc. That's how we grow a game, you know.
And Mark, between myself and yourself, we seen the game last year. And I don't think you realise how much that game hurt off me. There's so much hurt there. We really want to win this today. Really want to win this today.
Let's move on to the football. It's 2-1 to Gary. This is a pretty big weekend of football, you know. I know it's the All-Ireland quarterfinals in hurling, but I suppose they're the All-Ireland quarterfinals as well in football, all on at the same time. Roscommon and Tyrone is a very live at Sky Sports, 5 o'clock on Saturday night. If you were to pick a game at the start of the Super 8s to happen at 5 o'clock on Saturday night, 5 o'clock on a Saturday night on Sky Sports to kick off the Super 8s, I think you'd pick Roscommon and Tyrone. It screams Saturday evening to me, that game.
Can I read out a quote which I think will illustrate a lot of what this game will come down to? This is Kevin McStay after they played each other last year at a similar stage, right?
Yeah.
And McStay said, "The gap that we were hoping Tyrone wouldn't get, that they were planning not to give him, all of a sudden they had it and they were so hard to play against. Once that gap opens up, but Fred played to them. Their athleticism, their conditioning, it's way ahead of ours and we couldn't live with it." So that is where that, I think that was where that a lot, and we said this last week, Mick, Tyrone beat so many teams because of that, literally just because of that, because they
physical
can outrun teams incredibly well.
Yeah.
And Peter Hart is back now. We know that. I think that's massive. But I think that that's where a game like you look at, if you're to pick like let's say the Cassidy, McCarthy and Burns, that half back line, and where they're going to go, like who's going to tag them? It's probably going to be Kilroy, it's probably going to be Craig, one other. So that maybe that, like, even in that, have they improved their athleticism and conditioning to tag them as well as they did? Brian Kennedy's probably going to play midfield, that means Tiger Rourke will take him. You're talking about who'll take Colin McShane. Like Colin McShane is so much of his game is about physically out-muscling you and getting on top of you. And so I think if the man I'd tag on him actually is David Murray. I wouldn't even bother putting one of the dailies, because Murray took Comer 4 years ago and did a really good job in him.
Yeah.
And I then you have the dailies and you've got Connor Hussey to hold the centre, and suddenly that gives a bit more defensive solidity there.
Are Tyrone at that stage now though, where you've got, like, instead of the one guy that a lot of teams have that you need to double, they've got two or three, and that can be included from their half back line all the way to McShane up front, where you just need to have, there's too many guys to keep an eye on that eventually you run out of players.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. And that's the problem. I mean, like, Roscommon have definitely added a bit of defensive solidity, and I think, like, if that's what they do with the Dailies and Hussey holding, that certainly adds a bit more bite to their core when Tyrone come down. But the problem is going to be is your runners off the ball. Like, that's where Kildare were killed, by not tracking runners. And that, that sounds like a really basic thing, but it's an unbelievably hard thing to do when you've made a 40-yard run trying to get an attack, you're turned over, and then you're expected to go 7 yards back the other way with a guy like Kieran McGeary or like a guy like Frank Burns.
Who's
gone
before you even see it. Yeah. And sure, there's no point in going if you're 5 yards back.
Like, and suddenly that overlap carries the entire way up the field. Like, it's one man gets free, and that's how Tyrone kill you, because they managed to be smart with possession to get that one man on the ball.
Yeah, to be fair to Roscommon, I think they do seem slightly better matched physically than maybe they did in the last couple of years.
Yeah, they've improved a lot this year, yeah.
Anthony Cunningham seems to have, like, just a little bit of extra physicality. Obviously, it's a whole different ballgame coming against Tyrone, but you've seen against Mayo, who are often given as a team that can physically go man for man to Dublin. Like, Roscommon physically match Mayo.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a completely different task.
Yeah, the Connacht final was 6 months ago. Like, it was, you know, it was the first final played. It feels like a long time since we've seen Roscommon, and I think it's underrated them a little bit. I think just the absence,
the gap,
you know, because we've seen Tyrone 3 times since Roscommon have last played. Now, will they be cold? That's a big question, and that's going to be a serious test for Cunningham to see, you know, how he's kept them ticking over. It's the old kind of Munster hurling champions problem from back in the day, where you're waiting so long for your next big game that you're generally caught cold. And it happened how many times to that team? You know, so I would say with Tyrone, you would wonder, will Tyrone eventually run out of legs if somebody stays with them? But if they get the backup like they did against Cavan again, suddenly that tiredness turns into momentum. And it's like their 4th week in a row now at full pace. They have another game next week. Does it ever catch up with them?
I think Tyrone are like, I bang this drum a lot, but I just think they're physically at another level. And I think that when you can reinvigorate your squad with the likes of Kennedy or Cassidy or like Michael McKernan coming off the bench, like we raved about him last year. He was an all-star candidate and he's coming on. Like, you've got, if Rory Brennan or McNamee starts to show fatigue, I think Darren McCurry is actually coming into form. He's starting to peak now. So I don't see that affecting them. Definitely not this week anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. I think Roscommon though, definitely. I just would make the case for them based on, I think nobody gave them a chance against Mayo. They, you know, were arguing, like, it wasn't even, they got the 2 early goals and that definitely gave them a head start, but there was enough time, the Mayo were back in that game enough times and you said, oh, here we go, because it's like you had this, even though they were in the Super 8s last year, even though they were in Division 1 this year, we have a sense of a kind of a lesser than about Roscommon. Yeah. And they stayed with them score for score, and eventually, that wasn't all down to Mayo that game. You know, they won that game well. Cox has made such a huge difference to everything about them. They've all the same players as last year, plus this one classy full forward now. How much does that add to a team, you know? And then they did the same against Galway. And, like, Galway had them beaten. And Roscommon, we talked a lot about Galway's performance that day, but we didn't talk much about Roscommon's. You know, they shot brilliantly in the second half, especially. So I just think that they're two pretty good teams that they were up against. They might not be at Tyrone's level, especially early in the season, Mayo. But I wouldn't rule them out at home. This is at the Hyde as well, Gary, as I turn to you for a prediction or for a handicap.
Yeah, like, we know that the Roscommon crowd is going to be absolutely manic at this game. They're feverish at the best of times, but this first opening Super 8 games against Tyrone, where they have been written off
at home.
At home. I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough one. I think I'm going to go Tyrone minus -3, but I think it could be a bit closer than that.
I think it's bigger.
You think it's bigger?
I think Tyrone bet's by 16 last year. Like, you can't disregard that.
That's actually, it's important that we mention that at some stage in our analysis. Yeah, we haven't yet. Yeah.
I'll say minus four.
Was it in Oma last year? No, it was a neutral.
It was in Croke.
Coward's way out.
you're saying...
I'd say minus four. I think it might be minus -6, but I'm saying minus -4.
Minus -4 is bang on.
It
catapults you into a 3-2 lead. Gary with a bit of beginner's luck at the start.
Mm.
But he gets to go first for the big one this weekend, the one that we all can't wait for, the clash of Ireland's two biggest cities except for Belfast. It's the Dublin versus Cork in Croke Park. Oh, I was there in 2010, Gary, the year Cork won the All-Ireland for the All-Ireland semi-final. It was one of the best football matches I've ever been at in my entire life. Cadogan was moved on to Bernard Brogan at half time, completely changed the game. Cork won. You know, these two teams have gone from strength to strength since. Oh no, wait, sorry, no, they haven't. But Cork are back.
Yeah, they're back. This is me, isn't it?
Oh, this is you actually. Sorry, yeah, apologies.
So after all our giving up about Friday podcast during the week and about teams not being named for the live show, Cork decided to name their team on Tuesday for this game.
However, they did that last week and made three changes, I think, or four changes maybe just before the game.
And I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see Michael Hurley come into this team after the way he played last week. I think there's... this goes back to your conversation about how do you enjoy Gaelic football. Like, Dublin could well rack up a huge scoreline here, and I no doubt expect they will. But there's elements within it that you could probably get enough out of if you wanted it. Mainly, how are Dublin going to deal with this direct ball into Hurley? So what Cork are going to do, what Cork are going to do is kind of pepper Collins Hurley if Luke Connolly starts. I don't know if he actually will, but he's been named to start. Mm. If that's what they do, how will Dublin deal with that? Will at least provide some sort of... This is the thing we always talk about, is they may have a question mark over their full back line. If that is the case, then you would expect Cork to have a bit of luck there. So Cork could lose this game if it scores 3 goals.
Yeah, Cork, well, that's what they did in the Munster final. They exposed Kerry's full back line, but didn't have enough elsewhere, I suppose, to do it. But they also, they did it with a dual-pronged attack. It wasn't just kicking the ball into the forwards. They also ran at them, especially through Dean, but, you know, other players as well, you know, through the centre and just ran directly at them and kind of exposed a bit of a soft underbelly there. I don't know if Dublin have that. I think if you, especially you kind of, you've got like Keane O'Sullivan plus whoever else is in there, probably John Small, you know, directly marking him, and then O'Sullivan as the extra man. I think Dublin probably just have an answer to that, at least. I don't think they'd give him the space to run at him in the first place.
Yeah. But let me ask you a question. What do Dublin bring back in Michael Dermacauley into midfield now that McCarthy's not playing, or do they bring Kilkenny out and bring in Dean Rock into a forward line and play him with Costello?
So that's a lot more. That's
it's an incredibly attacking option. Front six, yeah.
And I think every time that Jim Gavin has been given the choice to do that, he hasn't. And so I don't see why there's any reason to change there. Yeah, like I don't think Jim Gavin is suddenly going to decide we're already a great team now, I want to be a love team.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's in his nature. I think he's happy to just win the 5 in a row, even if they win every game 1 point to no score. Like,
yeah, if he was going to do it, this is probably the game to try it, because.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Cork, obviously, but this is probably the one Dublin are looking at to say, like, they need to get back into it too. They haven't played in a while. But for Cork, I don't know, it's a bit of a strange one. Like, they played well in the Munster final. Everyone gave them credit for that performance. They bet Laois in a game that's, it's not easy to beat Laois, you know, and
hammered Laois. Like, I think that game was 6-6 or something like that after like 20 minutes, and then Cork just killed them before half time, and then they came out and got goals at the start of the second half, and suddenly nobody expected them to do that to Laois. Like.
But yet you're coming into this is supposed to be the Pirates of the Championship everyone looks forward to, and are Cork looking forward to this game to go up to Croke Park to play Dublin? Like, I don't
with
know.
No fans, because they're all going to Ireland the next day.
I think it's just a very strange dynamic around the game, and I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm trying to make something of it. I think I'm getting to the stage now where I am. We've seen Dublin the Leinster final. It feels like forever ago. Haven't seen them any other time this year. I am getting to the stage now where this is a team that's gone for 5 in a row. I want to start watching their matches a little bit closer. And I am kind of looking forward to that a little bit. I'd love to see them challenged, obviously. But, you know, I think that he will bring in Rock this week. and he might even keep Costello, but I think it'll be a forward that makes way, you know. But it could be, it could even be Mannion, like in a resting way, obviously not in a being dropped way, yeah. You know. But I think you'll see Rock start, and I think you'll see a few of these guys that were on the periphery coming in. I think maybe there could be a start for Rory O'Carroll.
Rory O'Carroll and Hurley, I'd pay in just to see that. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised, because yeah. Now it's not as if Gavin won't experiment. I just don't think he'll experiment with style.
Yeah, yeah.
He will with players, like.
Okay, I'd say, this is me, yeah. Yeah, I'd say I'd say Dublin minus, this could be double figures. I think it is double figures. I'm going to say.
Stop looking at me for clues, for God's sake. You're such a cheat.
I'd say minus 9.
Gary.
I go minus 10.
Morris.
Minus 10 is right.
It's minus 10.
Bartlett thought it might be 8.
4-3 to Gary. He's back in this one. That's, by the way, on RTE, I think 2, on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. It'll be on after the Roscommon Throne game, is on Sky. Over to Sunday now, where the two games are up against the hurling, ludicrously. Donegal versus Meath from Ballybuffet, 2 o'clock. Obviously all the provincial winners have home games this week against qualifiers, just in case you're wondering. 2 o'clock on Sunday, live on Sky Sports as well, at the same time as Cork and Kilkenny. Division 2 league final, this game was.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bad game, actually.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. Meath ran them close. Mickey Newman ran riot for the first 20 minutes, and then McGee came on, and Donegal kind of closed up shop. Oisín Gallan had a stormer there. We haven't really seen a huge amount of him since. Jimmy Brennan actually showed his early signs of
the what form he's that become this yeah. year. Yeah, yeah.
Donegal are flying heading into this one. It's interesting to see. I know, like, it's you can't ever really judge by this, but it'll be interesting to see what they do to Meath in comparison to what Dublin did, and if that can give us perhaps any clue as to where they stand up against Dublin.
That's a great point. Yeah,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, from a back's point of view, it is. I was going to say that I think that's more along the lines of, you know, Dublin, it's the leash conversation we were having from earlier in the Dublin hurlers. Like, I think Donegal will, like, be close. I don't think they're going to do what Dublin could do to a weaker team, but doesn't mean that they can't match up to the Dubs either, you know?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, like, I...
Although they've shown signs of it this year, actually, Donegal have, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Like, see, this is a weird one, because I've kind of maintained that I'm just not quite sure about Donegal and whether or not they're actually going to match up with Dublin just yet. And I was very positive about Meath earlier in this year, and look where that got me.
To the Super 8s and into Division 1.
Yeah, so vindication.
It's weird. We've been very negative Morris. About Meath, but yeah, they've had a good year.
They have, yeah. I think, like, the good thing for Meath looking at this game, and the same thing as the league final, is that their backs are more than capable of containing, like, I think if McGill takes McReady, that'll be a great matchup. Donald Keohane, we've seen already what he can do. He'll put whoever he's put on, and that's where it will be. Like, he's put on somebody and he'll put them on their back foot and they'll be expected to tag him. So that'll be interesting. But their problem is that you can only do that for so long while your forwards are as wasteful as they were against Dublin. I know they put some of that right against Clare, but I think that needs to be taken in context too.
Yeah.
This isn't me. This is you.
No,
is it?
It's Gary. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So
Donegal have a lot of momentum behind them. People are kind of lifting them up as the, well, not the heir to Dublin's throne, but they're only the challenger.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to say they're at home. I'm going to say minus 6, Donegal.
Okay, Morris.
Bigger, minus 7.
It is minus 7. And I think it could be higher. And I don't mean that disparaging to Meath, but we talked about the Clare Meath game in detail on Monday's show. And obviously with what happened in the Leinster final, I think that Meath are a level below. And I think once you get to the Super 8s and an away game, I think that's going to start showing. And I think there's 6 really good teams in the Super 8s this year. 5 really good teams, I would say. One who are probably underrated and need to show that they belong in here with Roscommon. And then 2 teams that are just a level below, I think, in Cork and Meath, yeah. So that leaves it with 1 game to go, with Gary on 4 points, Morris on 5. We're running late here, so we don't have as much time as I would have liked to for the biggest game of the weekend, at least in football, between Kerry and Mayo. You're going to Clarny this week. It's sold out, such as it is, as they're not selling all the tickets for some reason. And it's going to be massive. What a match this is.
It's going to be incredible. I've been thinking about this game all week, and I think it's like, there's so much things, elements within this game that will be just incredibly interesting to watch and revealing in terms of these both teams. But I think for Kerry, like, this is their, there's so many formative games this weekend. Like, this is Roscommon's chance to prove that they actually have improved for last year. Like, this is their chance to, a team that annihilated them last year, this is a huge, huge weekend for them. Similarly for Meath, that's the question for them, are you generally able to compete? And I think for Kerry as well, this is a formative game in terms of where are you really at. And the league final, I thought, showed Kerry a lot, and I'd be really interested to see how they adapted that, because Mayo kind of this like in a weird way, I think Mayo might be a tad underrated. I got this thing sent to me, somebody sent me this thing during the week, right? And it's so, and this is the level of, I know some people find this stuff kind of boring, but I just, if you give me a second to put it into context. So this was an Excel sheet, and it was a list of every single Mayo player not 15 and the minutes in the game were at the top, and it was color coded, and it was showing the zones that Mayo played through. So from 0 to 4, your half back line, your midfield, your half forward line, your full forward line, right? So what happens in each zone? So like, say it was color coordinated, so blue is a shot, or it could be a run, it could be a pass, whatever. And Mayo, unlike kind of I think nearly any other team in the country, are capable of playing through every single zone. The amount of times that happens, that, do you know what I mean? They're going through five different, like Kerry might be three. Kerry might go from their, they have like a couple of decent halfbacks who might go into their link men on the 45, and then they're going to their inside forwards. Dublin, three as well. Some teams are only two, you know, they're going to the team, they're trying to deliver ball long. But Mayo, because there's so many footballers in their team, are able to work through five zones. That's their kind of this running team where you look at their fullbacks, their wingbacks, midfield, all these players get on a huge amount of ball. Their possessions are quite high, and they can work through all of these zones, right? And if Kerry try and match that, they will lose this game. You cannot, and that's what I think happened to Galway. Galway tried to match that Mayo game, and Kerry tried to do it in the league final as well, and it didn't work. Kerry can't match that. So Kerry need to adapt, learn from what happened in the league final, and move on. And what I think they should do and what they will do are two very different things. But in a way, for Kerry to adapt to that, right? So it's been told today Paddy Durkin's not going to play, so he's not going to be on their 45. He picked up Shane Walsh against Galway, and I was watching Walsh, and Walsh was, Durkin was not attacking, and they'd boil in behind sweeping, because Walsh was good enough to put them on the back foot, so they were good enough to tag Walsh. And then eventually Comer went on the inside to try and add a new dimension. So that, and they eventually they tried to, he was boiling drop back there, and Walsh was told to push up as well. I could see them encourage him to get up and try and occupy Boyle so they could free up Comer, but he was wrecked. Like, he'd put in so much work at that stage, it wasn't working. Anthony Lee came on, he's a great player, but he's not that player to do that job, to keep their halfback occupied in terms of not letting them attack forward, which is something Mayo love to do. So if Durkin's out, Lee Keegan will play in that area, and the player he'll probably match up against is Sean O'Shea. And that for me is the wrong option, because Sean O'Shea is a great player and he will be a brilliant player, but he will not keep Lee Keegan occupied. Lee Keegan will attack, and that's what Mayo want to do. They'll get Keegan, or if it's Vaughan, or if it's Cone, they'll get forward from that half-back line if Sean O'Shea is playing there. McCarthy tried to do it in the league. He probably wasn't that player either, and he's also been, he's left the panel, obviously. So they need somebody in that position who's going to occupy, if it's Durkin's gone, so it'll be Keegan. And who?
Ryan.
I think it's David Clifford. I think David Clifford is a player to do that job. He does it for Fossa, for his local club, and he did it. His brother Paddy played full forward, and he played wing half forward, so he's familiar with the position.
Then
and
how
he's,
is and David Clifford going to kick it into David Clifford?
And he's good enough. But Kerry have enough players to play on the inside. James Donoghue is back fit. Don't forget that. Yeah. James Donoghue is not that player. And like,
Gainey looked in really good form in the Munster final.
He did. Yeah. And people keep saying this, but like, O'Donoghue can do that. The link job. James Donoghue is not that player. He's not. But he can play on the inside. So if you put him and Gainey inside, and then you've got Moynihan, O'Connor, if it's Spillane or if it's O'Brien working, doing that work to drop back, and you've got one player who's going to occupy a full half back line and not let the sweeper, who will be Boyle, keep him occupied as well. That's what they need to do. Like, they need to keep Keegan can't get to run the land the way he does. And the way, like, Sean O'Shea, I watched him in the league final, he tried to keep players up, but he just inevitably was being pulled back. And I think David Clifford is a man to do that
job. So where does Sean O'Shea play then?
I think Sean O'Shea does that, plays. So you start with the three boys inside, and then Clifford moves out in front of them, and then you've got, in terms of solidifying further back, all of a sudden you say to Sean O'Shea, don't mind, you're falling between two stools, it doesn't matter anymore, you're allowed to go back, you're allowed to drive back and then try and catch up with the play. And same with thing with Darren Moynihan, same thing with Jamie O'Connor, it's fine, lads, you don't need to push up and get us stretch out the field, you're allowed to drop back, but Clifford is a man to hit in the 45, he's out there, and then he's feeding inside to O'Donoghue or Gainey inside, or if they want to bring in somebody tall the way they did with Donaghy back in 2014, Musher O'Brien is on the bench, somebody like that comes in and it occupies that way. But Kerry will not win this game if they try and match that. Like, I've seen this stuff, they won't match them going through those zones. Mayo are too good to try and take them out their own game. You have to try and knock them out of stride, and I think the best way to do that is to bring Clifford out, play him there, and keep, because with Durkin gone, whoever else comes in there won't be the same extent of an attacker. And then if you give him another option, you're saying Clifford is on that 45. And if you give him, like, if Clifford got 5 yards in the 45, we all know he's liable to get run in on goal and score a goal from there. He's that good.
Yeah.
So I think he's the man to do that job. I'm saying this as what I think should happen, but I don't think it will happen.
Yeah, the Kerry man's really thought about this in detail. Just before we get to Spence, I do have one more question, because that is one way of stopping Mayo, but then the other thing that Kerry have to look to is what happened against Cork and a leaky full back line, and you've got Killian O'Connor back looking like already at full pace and being that brilliant link man as well as a danger man himself, and Mayo look like they found a real missing piece last week. Just looked like just having O'Connor back there just made all the forwards better, probably for the first time this year, and then they become a dangerous goal scoring threat again now. They weren't necessarily against Galway, but it just, you know, with a kind of a full back line that might not be fully at the races, is there anything they could have done since the Munster final to address that?
Well, I think they can get a bit more leeway in terms of trying to get fixed, like, again, with, if it's Morley or if it's Foley, and you're telling them, like, don't, and same thing with Clifford, don't worry about it. Like, we've got enough players who will fill in those voids. Your job, like, stick on them. Can they afford to have
Tom O'Sullivan basically playing corner forward?
Tom O'Sullivan probably come into their half back line and kind of attack the way he does. And I mean, that might not be necessarily a bad thing. Like, you got to remember as well, Mick, that in that league final when Mayo got the run in them in the second half, who were the players that began to overrun Kerry that day? It was Jermaine O'Connor, it was Matthew Horan, it was Paddy Durkin, and they're all gone. None of them are playing this weekend. So now you're saying to somebody like Tom O'Sullivan, okay, you're not trying to get Jermaine O'Connor, and this, I don't mean this in any way to be disparaging, I'm just saying this is how it is. You're not trying to get Jermaine O'Connor on his back foot. You're trying to get Fionn McDonagh, you're trying to get Kieran Tracy on his back foot. That's your job now. And that, like, whatever way you want to weigh it up, that's an easier job. It is an easier job than trying to do that with somebody like Jermaine O'Connor. And that way then, Kerry can still stick to that stuff. And you got to hope that drifting middle tier will do enough to not let runners, we talked about this with Roscommon, not let runners go from deep to actually tag them and kind of exert themselves physically. But I think, like, if Kerry try and match up to Mayo and play the Mayo way, they will lose this game. They don't have the same players to do it, and it's not serious. And they have to try and do something to knock Mayo out of kilter.
Mm.
And I think the best way to do that is to pick somebody like Clifford as your link, and then designate. You have these total taggers. They're not going anywhere. They're just following them everywhere they go. And that's where you, like, think about the difference from the Galway game. Think about the difference Sean Andy O'Callaghan made versus somebody like Owen Kernan. Like, Owen Kernan was, Owen Kernan was trying to get O'Connor back up the field, and he was making massive sprints. He kicked the ball wide after 15 minutes, and O'Connor just didn't even follow him. And then the second he kicked the ball wide, O'Connor was like, okay, you're going to try and attack on me. And he ran into the far away as possible. Like, he nearly ran off the field into the corner to try and drag Kernan. So he was punishing him for trying to run up the field.
Mm.
So Peter Keane should say to Tadhg Morley or Jason Foley, just don't go. Just stick with him, because he probably won't tag you. You're probably not going to contribute a huge amount compared to if you've got Clifford or Sean O'Shea on the ball up there anyway. So just don't go. You're clogging up space up there. Stay back, mark your man, and try and build it that way, because Kerry won't match them.
You've to pick this.
Do
you have anything that you have to
add? It's just like, it's a huge game, obviously, and me and Morris were talking, you can tell how much Morris is looking forward to the game. Anyway, we were talking about earlier in the week in the office. It's just, I think this is the charm of the Super 8, to have it in the opening weekend, Kerry and Mayo in Killarney.
Yeah.
Like, Kerry and Mayo is always a big game, but to have that in Killarney, I think it just makes it
100%.
Twice the occasion.
Yeah, it's as big a home game as I can remember Kerry ever having.
Absolutely.
You know, because especially with the way, the Munster final, you're used to it. No matter how good Cork and Kerry both are, you know, this is just something different, and it's a really, really good rivals that would never play home and away normally except in the league. I don't like the fact that it's gold against navy, I have to be honest. I think red versus dark blue is the way to go. Or don't have both teams wearing their away jerseys, stupid fucking system.
This group is a nightmare for kids, because Kerry will have Meath, Mayo, and that. So I think they... I have a funny feeling that when they played Meath in Division 1, they wore the... I have a the vision of them wearing the blue.
Oh, they still have a blue jersey, do they?
Not anymore because the Golden came in last year. Galvin got rid of that. Galvin got rid of that pronto. But I still think they might be forced away.
No, they will be with double away jerseys. Yeah. That's the stupid rule of the GA. I don't really get it. But go on. We need to move on.
I'm going
to
say it's carry out home. I'd say carry out. I'd say minus one.
I think I'm going to say minus two.
You're saying Kerry are favourites, minus two. Okay, yeah.
Kerry minus two. I think with the home advantage, I think they're going to get that extra point.
Okay. We have a winner. Morris was leading 5-4 about an hour ago there where we did the last match. Gary has got it. It's minus two for Kerry.
No way.
And Gary wins his first ever game, 6-5. Morris's losing streak continues.
Kerry are minus two against Mayo.
Yeah, they are. Kerry are minus two. So congratulations to Morris, or to Gary, apologies. And that's an interesting one. I was surprised at that now, I have to say. I can't wait for that game, especially after the preview we just got there. Can't wait for the hurling games on Sunday either. A little bit less so Dublin and Cork, but you know, there'll be interesting things to see. Cork surprised us all in the Munster final. That's the only thing I'll say about that. And they made a really, really exciting, good game of it and still lost. If they can do that again this week, I think we'll all be happy. But we'll be back with you on Monday for a review of all these games and lots more.
I might not be back now after today.
We'll let you on Monday, but you're banned from next Friday.
This is like when Bernard Brogan got injured and Tacoma Costello came in and managed to kick out Dean Rock.
That's exactly it, yeah. So we'll be back on Monday with a look back on all these games. Don't forget, you'll be able to check out Morris's Cara Healy interview on balls.ie tomorrow morning, Saturday morning. If you're listening to us on Saturday, that's today. And there'll be lots more GAA stuff on the site over the weekend as well. So listen to that and we'll chat to you Monday.